I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of
Welcome to Susie Larson Live. I'm always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, every single one of us has been hurt deeply in some way, but how many of us have really wrestled with that call to forgive? I mean, wrestled it to the ground, not so much to forget or necessarily to trust again, but to entrust the situation to God so that that offense no longer damages our soul. How many of us are walking around with an open wound in our souls and unforgiveness in our hearts? And why does it matter? Well, that's what we're talking about today. New York Times bestselling author Lisa Turkhurst joins me today to talk about her new book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget, Discover How to Move On, Make Peace with Painful Memories, and Create a Life That's Beautiful Again. And typical Lisa fashion, this book is just packed with content, so many quotable quotes, so many insights. You can't read this thing fast. You got to read it slow. You need to journal. You got to give some thought to some of these nuggets that she's planted in this book. And we've got three copies of this hardcover book to give away. If you wrestle with unforgiveness, I want you to get a copy. So if you can enter the drawing this way, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. And if you feel so led, share a bit of your story of what's hard to forgive, what's hard to forget, or how you've worked through it. I always love hearing from you. Quick announcement before we hear from Lisa. We are super excited that we've launched the great giveaway. We do this pretty much every year. It'll culminate on December 18th, which happens to be my birthday. But what we're asking is for thousands of you to be mobilized into random acts of kindness. Tell us that you're in. You can sign up on our website, myfaithradio.com. And why do you need to sign up? So we can send you a few cards to go with whatever gift you're going to give. If it's gift cards or a basket or some goodies you're going to drop off at a neighbor's. It's just a little card to say you're cared for, you're loved, and I'm part of something bigger right now, mobilizing people with random acts of kindness. I hope you'll join us. And then on the 18th, all of our shows will open the phone lines and we'll hear from you back from the mission field where you come and you tell us what God did. And a couple of you, the most inspiring stories, will win a really big, fun gift basket of goodies. So hope you'll join us. Check it out, myfaithradio.com. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Lisa Turkhurst is president of Proverbs 31 Ministries. She's a number one New York Times bestselling author of It's Not Supposed to Be This Way and Uninvited, as well as a few other books. She writes from her gray farm table and lives with her family in North Carolina, and I love her. Lisa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Susie. And did you say your birthday is December 18th?
Yes. Why is yours?
No, it's not my birthday, but it's my daughter's birthday. So that's
really
fun.
Oh, it is. Oh, that is so fun. It is hard to compete with Jesus, I'll be honest. But, you know, I mean,
she would say the same thing.
I think we should start a club. I'm just saying. But yeah, that's really what a precious time. That's amazing. Well, you know this. You've been on the show before. We love to start by talking scripture. And I know you are a woman of the word. So what's the Lord been speaking to you about these days?
I found this verse, and it's probably a verse that other people have stumbled on many times, but it really arrested me. It confused me. And then it's now inspiring me. Romans 12:18. If it is possible, and I love that it starts with if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, and I love that it doesn't say as far as it depends on other people, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Romans 12:18.
Say more about that.
Well, the reason why I like the verbiage of this verse is because it says, if it is possible, which tells me sometimes it's not possible, and it gives me permission to be a little human sometimes, and it doesn't say that you won't have struggles with people. It says, as far as it depends on you, which means I've got a responsibility that I can choose peace at this time where it feels like peace is so not possible sometimes, but it says live at peace with everyone. And at first I was like, oh, that verse seems very impossible. But then I think right now it's inspiring me because I realize I'm not a victim of the circumstances or the people that bump into my happy every day. I can actually trade all of that drama for an upgrade. And just because someone invites me to a drama doesn't mean I have to be a willing participant.
That's your next book, Lisa.
It's really inspiring me right now.
I love that. Thank you for sharing so much. Well, for those who don't know your backstory or even, you know, what led up to this book on forgiving what you can't forget, as much as you're able and feel like, would you give us some backstory? Bring us back to that place where your world was upended.
Yeah, well, this isn't a story that I ever thought I would tell because it's not a story that I ever thought I would live. And I still cry over what happened. So it's not that it's tied up in a neat, nice bow because there was a lot of trauma involved. And so, you know, I'm still walking in that messy healing process. But basically, my husband of over 2.5 decades got caught up in some addictions. And I didn't grow up in a household with addictions, so I didn't even know what to look for. I honestly spent about 2 years thinking I was crazy, like I was the problem. Because I kept saying, I just sense something's wrong. And, you know, when you have discernment that fires, but then discernment doesn't give details, it can start to be a very dysregulating process. And so I became utterly convinced that it was me, that I was crazy, that I was imagining things. And then I found out my husband was being unfaithful. And then I realized, oh, these are addictions that we're dealing with. And it just felt like my entire world imploded. And it wasn't just, you know, the marriage falling apart. My health started deteriorating. I felt like I was very ill-equipped to walk through this crazy traumatic situation that was in front of me and to add everything up and put it into perspective. I'm also a very visible person. And so then after walking through this privately for 18 months, the rumor mill stirred up. And I knew I was either going to have to get ahead of it and share the truth or let rumors tell the story. And I didn't want that. And so at that point, I had to invite the world into my very private pain, and it was excruciating.
Oh, goodness. If you don't mind sharing, you don't have to, but how did you find out? Like, what was the tipping point where suddenly discernment gave way to details?
Well, I kept asking my husband what was wrong, and I kept attributing it to life is busy. Our 3 of our 5 kids were getting married that year, and we were in a real transition season. Our youngest child was, you know, graduating, and it was time for her to move out of the house. And so I just kept attributing it to when life slows down, when, you know, we get through this season, you know, things will get better. And then I found something, and it was just undeniable. And I knew. And, you know, it would have been a million times easier if my husband would have come and shared with me what was happening. But that discovery, that unexpected moment of horror, that was very traumatizing.
Oh, bless your heart. Anything else around that time that, like, some of the more painful aspects of, because this was a multi-layered trauma. And as you say, it's, you know, you're a public person, so it adds so much weight because people are so quick to make assessments and judgments and throw stones and, Lord have mercy on us. But, I mean, so talk about some of the other aspects of this, Lisa, that were traumatizing for you or just drove that pain in deeper.
Yeah, well, I think one of them was, you know, when a marriage falls apart, the shrapnel of that implosion affects everyone who dares to come close to it. And different people have different reactions. And one of the most hurtful things that people would say to me is, well, you know, Lisa, there's always 2 sides to every story. And I remember looking at one person that said that to me. And I said, I want to believe that you saying that is you trying to be helpful. But when you say there's always 2 sides to every story, that seems like you're looking at this as a spectator sport. This is not a spectator sport. This is a family falling apart. And the best thing to do is not to pick a side, but get down on the field and help those who are bleeding and hurting and quite devastated by this.
Wow. That's very well put from someone who is bleeding under their armor. Wow, Lisa. Well, you know, I remember, we're going to pause here for a break, but I remember when you did go online and you shared the video of what's happening in your marriage, and most people thought that you were getting divorced because it looked like, based on how you described what was happening, it was irreparable. So when we come back, if you would share when you got first glimpses of this actually, I might be able to hope again. And I know there's a lot that happened in between. I want to talk about what your counselor taught you. But when you got the first glimpse that I may be able to salvage this marriage, we'll talk more about that on the other side. Talking to Lisa Turkhurst, her brand new book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. Got a few copies to give away. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing. 877-933-2484. Back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to Lisa Turkhurst today, New York Times bestselling author, just released this book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. So maybe I'm going to back up, after news of your hubby's betrayal and just life sort of imploding around your marriage. Talk about what you did next. Talk about, did you go to counseling right away? And how did God start to help you put some of the pieces back together again?
Well, that's a good question, Susie, because I did not go to counseling right away. I was floundering, just hurting so much and not knowing what to do about it. And I remember telling one of my friends, you know, if I was in a car accident today and my right arm was severed, people would immediately know what to do. They would call 911. They would get the medical professionals there to the scene. They would give the proper medication. They would probably even get an anesthesiologist involved to help numb the excruciating pain. And people just know what to do when there's physical trauma. There's a hospital to go to. But when there's emotional trauma, it's no less painful. And yet people don't know what to do because there's not 911. There's not a hospital to rush someone to when their marriage falls apart. And I just remember thinking, you know, where's the anesthesiologist that can help numb this excruciating pain? Because I don't feel like I can survive another 60 seconds of this. And eventually I did find a counselor that I could go to. And I remember I went to that first appointment and I just sat there and cried. And I kept thinking, please don't send me home. Like, surely you're going to show me to this back hallway where you go put patients that just shouldn't be driving. They shouldn't be going home. They need 24-hour constant care. And, our session ended and I got in my car and I just wept. And I swore to myself that day as I was just bawling and feeling like I'm not going to survive this. I swore to myself that if I do, by God, I will help other people because I just can't deal with this. I can't fathom the number of people that are going through this depth of emotional pain and not having an immediate resource to put in their hands.
Is it ever too early to consider forgiveness, Lisa? I mean, are there times when you have to work through initial trauma before you wrestle with forgiveness, or what does that look like?
I think that's a really interesting conversation to have because I think a lot of mental health professionals may say, yeah, it's too soon. You need to work through some of the trauma. But what I found is it's a both and question. In other words, it's both too soon for some parts of it, and it's never too soon for forgiveness. And what I mean by that is, if we understand that forgiveness is a decision and a process, it makes space for both immediate forgiveness and the process of forgiveness and healing the trauma before forgiveness, full forgiveness can happen. So what my counselor did with me is, I remember during the hardest part of the journey, I posted a blog where it was time to tell the world what was going on. And it was simultaneously the best day and the worst day. It was the worst day because we had to invite public opinion into our very private pain. But at the same time, it was the best day because it was the first time that my husband really faced what his addictions were on his own. And it was the first time he went and checked himself into a treatment center and stayed. And that was huge progress. But when I drove myself to the counseling appointment, I was just devastated. I felt like my whole world had imploded. And my counselor looked at me and said, "Lisa, do you want to heal?" And I said, "Yes, I very much want to heal." And he said, "Well, today's a great day to start working on forgiveness." And I remember looking at him and I thought, "Are you high? Are you crazy? Like, absolutely not. I cannot start working on forgiveness because I don't know how this story is going to turn out. I still feel completely traumatized, and I don't even think I'm done hurting yet." And that's when my counselor explained that I could make the decision to forgive, to sever the source of suffering, but then I could also allow space to walk through the process of forgiveness, where I realized over time the full impact of what these actions had cost me, and there was space for both. And so he looked at me and he said, "Let's just don't even start with the decision to forgive. Let's start with your pain." And he told me that I needed to list out all of the ways that I'd been hurt on 3x5 cards. And I put them down in front of me. And then it was about 35 or 40 cards because there was so much pain. And after I did that, I looked at him, and of course, Jim, my counselor, is not the one that hurt me, but he did something so profound. And he said, "Lisa, I believe you. I believe that all of this happened to you, and I want to tell you it was wrong." And it was so empowering. It was like I could feel in my soul, I could put a stake in the ground, and I could say, "I deserve to stop suffering because of what has happened to me." And so my forgiveness, my decision to forgive for the facts of what happened that day, was my decision to detach my ability to heal from the choices of another person that I had no control over. I couldn't control whether or not Art ever admitted that what he did was wrong or that he said he was sorry. So I couldn't wait on all of those decisions that I have no say-so over to happen before I forgave. And so my first step of forgiveness was actually for myself. And it was not an unfair gift I was giving to Art. It was a gift I was receiving from God, that, "God, I receive your forgiveness for this situation. I'm going to let it flow to me and then through me. And I will let it pass through me and onto Art for all this pain and all this hurt. And whatever my feelings will not yet allow for, the blood of Jesus will surely cover."
That's what I remember, Lisa, when you and I were at a speaking event together this last year pre-COVID, and you were on stage and you actually had little recipe cards and you were putting them on the ground and then you covered them with red felt. Talk about that exercise that your counselor led you through.
Well, it was important for me to have a marked moment, because what happens often when we forgive, you know, 6 minutes afterwards or maybe 6 months afterwards, we'll get triggered in our pain. And all those feelings of bitterness and resentment and anger and hurt, they come crashing back onto us when we get triggered. And we can start to doubt, like, maybe our forgiveness didn't work, or maybe, you know, I'm a forgiveness failure, or maybe I didn't mean it. So it's important to have a marked moment of forgiveness where we can say, "I did make the decision to forgive, and no one can take that away from me." And so that day where I put the cards down on the ground. And then whenever I said, I forgive Art for this hurt that happened. And then I covered it with red felt. And I said, and whatever my feelings will not yet allow for, the blood of Jesus will surely cover it. So I had that marked moment. No one could take that away from me. And I knew I was obedient to God. So that later, when I was going through the process of forgiveness and healing from the emotional trauma, when I would get triggered, I would say, no, I'm not a forgiveness failure. I had a marked moment. I have forgiven for the fact of what happened, but now I'm walking through the process of healing and learning to forgive for the impact. And that process of healing can take a long time.
Boy, that distinction seems like it's incredibly important, because you always have the accuser in your ear, and you're raw, you're bleeding, you're trying to forgive, you do that marked moment, as you say, in obedience, and then you get triggered, they re-injure you again, and the emotion and the trauma and everything gets triggered, and the enemy's right there to accuse you and put you, I would think, into a place of reaction. So to have the presence of mind to go, no, now I'm going to forgive the impact of what's happened. That, boy, that's not for sissies. I mean, that's some hard work, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I used to feel so frustrated. Like, why does this healing process have to take so long? I mean, couldn't God just let it all hit us at once and then we deal with it and move on? And, you know, why do we have to get triggered? I mean, getting triggered in my pain is so inconvenient, because we can't time our triggers. It's not like we can say, okay, Tuesday night, while I'm sitting in the bathtub playing praise music, taking communion, you know, that's a perfect time for a trigger to hit me. That's not how it happens. It's like in the middle of the grocery store, suddenly my phone, I look down and it's sending me a memory movie from pictures that were taken four years ago. And I look at the pictures and I do the math and I'm like, oh my goodness. That's when we were on that family vacation and I thought everything was fine and it was not fine. And I'm so triggered in my pain. The next thing I know, I've laid my head down across the banana display and the fruit guy comes up to me and says, can I help you? And I say back to him, oh, I so wish you could help me, but they don't pay you enough to help people like me. And, you know, that's how triggers happen. They just come at us. And I used to feel so frustrated about that. But then I really felt like God revealed to me, Lisa, this is my grace, that the impact of the emotional fallout from this situation, it's my grace that it leaks into your life bit by bit, because if the full impact would have hit you at the moment of discovery, it probably would have killed you. And so I now see those triggers as not a setback, but really a set up for more emotional healing and more awareness that there's something else to deal with.
Oh, fantastic. When we come back, I want to talk about what your counselor said, that he wants you to collect the dots, connect the dots, so you can correct the dots. We're going to talk about how our past narrative, our past story impacts how we process present pain. This is an incredible part of the story. Talking to Lisa Turkhurst, her book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget. That drawing is going to be open for a little bit till after the show. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live, having a really great conversation with Lisa Turkhurst. She's a New York Times bestselling author, president of Proverbs 31 Ministries, released this new book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. Three copies of this hardcover book. You can text the word book, just book, to 877-933-2484. It'll kick back a link so you can register to win this resource. One of the things your counselor suggested I thought was wonderful. He said to collect the dots, connect the dots, and then correct the dots of your story. Unpack that a bit more.
Well, a lot of times when we're walking through forgiveness or even walking through just hard times, we will have an out of proportion reaction to an offense at hand. And my counselor always says, when it's hysterical, it's historical. In other words, when you bring too much emotion for what's right in front of you, it often means you're pulling from unhealed past pain into your present circumstance. And I was certainly doing that. So it kind of let me know that there were things in my past that I needed to go back and examine. And part of the reason is because we all live a story, and then we all have a story that we tell ourselves. And it's often the story that we tell ourselves where we find misperceptions or wrong thoughts or skewed beliefs about ourselves, others, and God. So I went on a hunt into my past to say, where are some things that happened that gave me an altered perception or maybe even a wrong belief about myself, others, or God? Because sometimes what makes us fall apart in our faith is not doubt, but it's being too certain of the wrong things. And so where have I been too certain of some wrong things in my childhood, my growing up years, and my early adulthood? And so to do that, I had to go back and collect some of those stories that shaped me. And once I collected those dots, I then had to connect them. Where did this story feed a perception into this story that fed a perception into this story that eventually led to a belief that may not be the absolute truth, or that may not line up with God's word, or may not line up with reality? And once I collected those dots and connected those dots, then it was time to do the healing work of correcting some of those perceptions and beliefs. And what was interesting is not only did I do this exercise, but I had a friend of mine that did this exercise. I read her some of these chapters when I was writing them. And from reading these chapters, she put together that she dreaded every night when the sun went down. And now she's, you know, well into her late 40s, early 50s. And her family has always said to her, like her kids and her husband, why won't you ever take a sunset walk with us? Or why don't you want to sit out on the deck and enjoy the sunset? And she's like, I don't like sunsets. Well, when I read this chapter to her, she suddenly realized it wasn't that she didn't like sunsets. It's that when she was a child, when the sun was going down, that was often a time that she would experience trauma in her home. And so for years, she just said, I don't like sunsets. When we did this exercise, I remember the first night she called me, she said, I walked outside and I saw the sun setting. And Lisa, it's beautiful. And it was a profound moment for her. And then it freed her to be able to take a sunset walk with her children. And, you know, her children personalized this for so many years, they thought something was wrong with them and it had nothing to do with them. So you can see how important this exercise is, because sometimes when we're forgiving, it's not just about what's in front of us. It's what's unhealed from our past that's feeding the feeling of being stuck right here, right now.
It's one of the reasons we talk so much on the show about the healing process and soul healing, because an unhealed wound perpetuates more wounds, not only in and through us, but all around us. And the enemy loves it that way. And, you know, you say the things marking us from yesterday are still part of making us today. If we listen carefully, woven throughout our narrative is a belief system that formed us inside as children. This heavily impacts how we view forgiveness and healing as well. And Lisa, I so appreciated how you shared that because of childhood sexual trauma, that your brain instantly jumps to extremes whenever something happens. You know, I've experienced that as well, and I've noticed that about myself. I couldn't believe in my book, Fully Alive, I wrote about this incredible, unreasonable fear about going to prison, like just making a mistake and accidentally and going, you know, and you wrote that very thing. And it was so validating and helpful to read. But I want you to talk about that, because you and I talked, it was one of the events we were at together, about that book, The Body Keeps Score. And that doctor, that author, he said, after trauma, the world is experienced through a different nervous system. And so while other people are showing up and enjoying life and experiencing normal life, your system is working overtime to suppress inner chaos. And wow, I think we need to pause and let that in, especially for those of us who've walked through trauma.
Yeah, and I tell a story in the book about how my family, we were at the beach one time, and my family, they're always wanting to do like these fun, adventurous things. Well, they decided that they wanted to drive through the coffee drive-through line backwards. And so they were all laughing and having a good time. The people at the coffee shop thought it was hilarious. My mind was in hyperdrive. thinking about all the terrible things that could happen. I could not enjoy the moment because I was so terrified. We're going to run over somebody. We're going to hit the side of the building. We're going to show up in the newspaper. We're going to get arrested. We're going to go to prison, you know? And I could not enjoy that moment with my family at all because my mind would not settle down. I think a lot of people assume that the worst will never happen. I assume that the worst is happening in this present moment. So, you know, I have to fight against those tendencies. I heard one time someone say that an acronym for fear is false evidences appearing real. But when you're the person that your worst fears have already come true, then it's no longer false evidences appearing real. You know, it's like, no, I know sometimes these fears actually happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Do I ever appreciate that? It's just absolutely. Well, talk about art as much as you feel so led. When for him, I mean, what was you give a little bit of his backstory that there was some healing that needed to happen to he needed to disconnect some dots and maybe reframe his story and find some healing. If you wouldn't mind, as much as you're able, could you share a little bit about his breakthrough?
Yeah. So for years, art took so much of what was happening in and around him, and he used it as this evidence, more evidence upon more evidence that told him this narrative, like, I'm not good enough. And how that played out in my marriage is one of my, I call them shame scripts. So one of the things I kept telling myself was, don't ever ask too much of other people, because when you ask things of other people, you just set yourself up to get hurt. So art's love language is acts of service. So he was all the time offering to do things for me, because often how we best receive love is how we give love. So he was constantly offering to do stuff to me. Well, because of my shame script of, you know, don't ever ask people to do things for you because that's really going to be a setup for them to disappoint you. So I would often say, no, that's okay. I'll do it myself. Well, his shame script was, you're not good enough. So when I would say, no, I can do that myself, I was doing it to protect myself so that I didn't set myself up for disappointment. He then heard, you're not good enough. And so years of this went on, and we were in a counseling session just a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, Lisa, it's just hard because for 25 years you've been telling me I'm not good enough. Now, Susie, as God is my witness, I have never said those words to my husband. But it was his interpretation and his personalization of me telling him, that's okay, I'll do it myself. What he heard was not, that's okay, I'll do it myself. He heard, you're not good enough. And so it was a huge breakthrough for us to realize this was a dysfunctional dance that we were in. Me using my shame script to taint everything he said, and him using his shame script to taint everything I said. And when shame talks to shame, it will always equal more shame. And so it was crucial for us to connect these dots, so that we could correct them. And now sometimes when we sit down and we have a conversation, I will say, I am not saying you're not good enough. Please don't personalize this. I'm saying I'm afraid of being disappointed. So therefore, I'm asking for this to happen.
Boy, that's good. You know, no healing process is a straight line, point A to point B. How did you both navigate it? This is probably an overly obvious question. Two steps forward, three steps back. I mean, and how long did it take for you to start having more hope than you had fear?
Well, it's been a long process of healing. It's a messy process. I mean, even just a couple of weeks ago, Art and I had another, you know, opportunity for healing. And I remember I looked at him and I said, do you think we're really going to make it? And, you know, that's just where we are. There was so much trauma done to our relationship. There was so much hurt and pain. And, you know, we're also dealing with some addictions that Art has that can cycle in and out even today. And so this is a process that's not easy and it's not tidy. And I always want to be so careful that I don't tie things up in a neat, nice bow and say, and then they lived happily ever after. I am grateful. I'm so, so grateful for the healing that we have found. I'm so grateful that we are working really hard to fight for our marriage. I'm so grateful that our kids have watched us survive the worst of the worst and still on the other side of it. And, you know, we're able to laugh together as a family. I'm so grateful for all of that. And I realize that a lot of people don't have that choice. But Susie, what I am more determined than ever to do is to pursue a redemption story with God. And a redemption story with God sometimes includes reconciliation and sometimes it doesn't. So I'm always careful. I don't want the person who wasn't given this chance to have a reconciliation story to think they can't have a redemption story, because with redemption with God is always, always possible. But for me and Art, we just take it one day at a time. And, you know, we see that the process is messy and there is a lot that we've accomplished behind us, but there's still so much work still ahead of us. And we just keep walking one foot in front of the other and we celebrate what we can celebrate and we work on what we need to work on. And, you know, we're making it.
That's amazing, Lisa. And I appreciate the honesty around that, because it is such a messy process. And how about you, as you've counseled through this trauma and worked it through with God and studied scripture? You know, just as we were talking a few minutes ago, the false evidence appearing real. Well, for the person who's walked through serious and significant trauma, where we've been there and gone places, but that, you know, that whole adage, God won't give you more than you can handle. I don't believe it, because there's so much on this earth that is more than we can handle, except for the grace of God. But in your process, where would you say you are in that healing process of not living in fight, flight, or the hyper alert, or the fear? Are those things settling down? Or do you feel like when you've been through what you've been through, it's something for which you must just contend kind of each moment and just rely on the grace of God?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to discover that and figure it out. You know, I definitely see so much progress that has been made. But, you know, part of what I've walked through caused some pretty serious PTSD, you know, and how it usually plays out in me is when my discernment fires, I don't know if it's my hurt and my past pain speaking, or if it is a real reason for alarm. And so, you know, I have to really work through that each time I get triggered, and I have to try to figure out, you know, is this my trauma speaking, that maybe there's more healing that needs to be done, or is there really smoke that indicates there's a fire? And so, you know, I'm still working through that. But the best thing that we have learned in this season is when I get triggered, Art has the opportunity to give me a real gift. And if he says to me, Lisa, it's so understandable that you're concerned right now. It's so understandable that you would be afraid right now. Of course you are. We've been through so much. Now, what do you need? Do you need me to show you my phone? Do you need me to sit down and process it? Do you need to be alone? Do you need me just to give you a hug and reassure you? You know, that's such a gift. That very humble, patient processing is so, so reassuring to me. And trust is not instantly rebuilt when we forgive somebody. Trust is rebuilt only time plus believable behavior. So I'm constantly like eking toward trust, but I always, you know, it's like I need to trust but verify, trust but verify. And so when he does that, reassuringly just say, of course this is going, you know, to happen, it actually builds trust. But if he were to say, what, this again? I can't believe we're still talking about this. You know, if he were to do that, that would be so triggering and so alarming, because it would bring me right back to those days where he would have that kind of reaction and things really were going on.
Okay, when we come back, I want you to speak to the person listening today who's saying, I want to forgive, but I fear the offense will be repeated, or hanging onto this grudge gives me a sense of control, or they're not even sorry. And I want you to talk to a little about, you write about boundaries in the forgiving process. I think sometimes people are terrified of it because they're interpreting it to mean just lay down and let people run over you. And that's not at all what we're talking about today. Talking to Lisa Turkert. So if you've got questions, we've got one more segment with Lisa. Her book is titled Forgiving, What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. Friend, I want you to believe that a beautiful life is possible. Hey, if you want in on the drawing, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to Lisa Turkert. She's a New York Times bestselling author, president of Proverbs 31 Ministry, and a warrior who has walked through her share of storms. We're looking at her book today, Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. We've got three copies to give away. I wish we had 100, but we've got three, and I would love to get one in your hands. You can enter the drawing by texting the word book to 877-933-2484. And I know, Lisa, when you're feeling raw, like you're not only bleeding, you've got an infection in your soul. It's terrifying at the proposition of forgiveness, and you really address that. So what do you say to the person listening today who's thinking either this, I fear the offense will be repeated, or hanging out of the grudge gives me a sense of control, or I'm so hurt I can't even conceive of going towards forgiveness, or they're not even sorry, or all of the above? What do you say to them?
First of all, I'd say I understand because I felt all of those things. You know, there was a season where I really felt like my resentments kind of were my way of self-protecting. And, you know, if I could keep that person at an arm's length using the tactic of resentment, then it was just me trying to prevent them from hurting me again. But what I realized is that resentment and that those feelings of bitterness, they didn't want to just be a feeling in my heart. They wanted to become my only feeling and turn me into somebody I didn't want to be. And I had to make the decision. My heart is too beautiful of a place for bitterness, anger, and resentment and unforgiveness. And so what do I do? Because I do want to be protected. I don't want to feel like I'm being held hostage by this person who's unwilling to change, or by the actions of a person that, you know, just are not healthy and not good. And so it was crucial for me to walk through a deeper understanding of boundaries. And boundaries are not meant to shove another person away. They're not a sign of unforgiveness, and they're not, you know, something cruel that we place to manipulate or control other people. Boundaries don't shove another person away. They help hold me together. And so in my book, Forgiving What You Can't Forget, when I wrote the boundaries chapter, it was just very important for me to empower and equip people to understand that forgiveness and being a forgiving person is not a sign of weakness. It's not us saying, it's okay, you can just keep abusing me or hurting me or betraying me, because that's not healthy. And when Jesus says we must forgive 70 times 7, Jesus did not mean that you're supposed to get walked on or stomped on or abused. That's not what Jesus was saying. I picture Jesus saying you need to create enough emotional and maybe even physical distance from this person who continues to hurt you so that you can forgive them 70 times 7 without being emotionally destroyed in the process.
Let's talk for a moment about perspectives and perceptions. You said the experiences I have affect the perceptions I form. The perceptions I form eventually become the beliefs I carry, and the beliefs I carry determine what I see. Say more about that, how a person can maybe go about untangling some of that so they can get free.
Well, I do think it's really important that we pay attention to those scripts inside of our head, because It, you know, I tell the story in the book about my friend who made soup for me. I don't know if you remember the story, but she made this soup for me, and she was telling me, Lisa, you know, you need to eat organic food. Organic food is really, really good. And I was like, oh, sometimes I believe that, but then sometimes I wonder, is that just a marketing ploy to make me pay more money for my food? I don't know, you know. So she said, okay, let me make you this broccoli and cauliflower soup, and I'll use all organic vegetables. So she made it, and Susie, it was the best soup I ever had. I mean, I ate one bowl, and then for lunch, and then I had like another bowl that afternoon for snack, and then at about 5 o'clock, I was like, I want another bowl of that soup. And my kids walked into the house as I was finishing up the third bowl of soup, and I said, you guys have got to try what my friend Meg made. It's this broccoli and cauliflower soup. It's so good. I said, I don't know what these spices are she put in it, but I mean, it truly is the best soup I've ever had. And my kids went over and put the soup in their bowls. And then they sat down at the table and they started hysterically laughing. And I said, what in the world are you guys laughing at? And they said, Mom, the soup is full of bugs. I said, no, it's not. Those are not bugs. Those are spices. Well, they took their iPhone out, took a picture, blew it up, and Susie, there were legs coming out of the spices. And so I called my friend Meg. I said, Meg, what in the world? There are bugs all in this soup. And she said, well, you know, it's just more protein. That's what happens when you do organic. But here's the thing, you know, my perception was that those black things floating in the soup were spices, and I thought that was the best thing in the world. But my perception, even though I believed with all my heart that those were spices, my perception was not correct. Therefore, I believed the wrong thing. And we can do that in our life. We can become so convinced of the wrong things that we believe things about ourselves, about God, about other people, and though we're utterly convinced it's true, it's not true. And a big part of the healing process is to recenter or realign what, when we see something, we have to make sure that as we form our perceptions and form our beliefs, that it's all based on what is actually true, not what we think is true.
Hmm. Would you think it'd be wise for someone to just sit some, get some time alone, or do they maybe for sure should do this with the counselor? I don't know, but to look at some of those kind of markers in their timeline, these moments and experiences that they had when they realized they weren't enough, when something really hurt, and maybe kind of unpack what was the message? What did it tell me about myself? What did it tell me about God? I mean, do you think there's some wisdom in doing that alone, or should you always do that with a counselor?
Well, I think you can certainly do it alone. You can do it with a trusted friend. I mean, I definitely also think it's really wise to have a counselor that you can really trust, a Christian counselor that's going to, you know, really bring both the therapy side of things and the theology side of things together. But, you know, Susie, I recognize sometimes people can't afford a counselor, or they can't find one. And so it became really important to me to give access to my counselor, to other people. And my counselor was so gracious. So at Proverbs 31 Ministries, we've done many podcasts as part of the Proverbs 31 podcast, and we call it Therapy and Theology. And we do this. We help bring people, bring those two worlds together so that as people sit with their thoughts and sit with their perceptions and sit with their beliefs, if you don't have a counselor, listen to our Therapy and Theology podcast series through Proverbs 31 Ministries podcast, and I think it will really help you.
Well, I thank you for leveraging everything the enemy has thrown your way, leveraging it for the kingdom, that many, many could be helped. And this is no different, Lisa. Great job on the book. And thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Absolutely. It's always a complete honor to be with you. And thank you, Susie, for what you do day in and day out for everyone else.
Thanks so much. That's Lisa Turkhurst. Friends, her book again is Forgiving What You Can't Forget. Discover how to move on, make peace with painful memories, and create a life that's beautiful again. You see that? You have a part. God plays a part. Life can be beautiful again. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.